Hello, my name is John Cullis, and welcome to another episode of Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine on bbsradio.com. And the date of today is Saturday and 6 October 2007. And I have on the phone David Goff. He was a part of the Navy. He did some remarkable things. He was on the Navy mind control project, if I may say it like that. And he is also into in Denver Airport as a secret underground base. And he went under there and had some remarkable experiences. And he had also some UFO encounters. All of it has been discussed last 2 weeks ago, approximately. I think 2 or 3 weeks ago. And now we have again on the phone, but this time we have more time and we can talk more relaxed, because last time we had only about 25 minutes, but now we can talk normal, relaxed. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you there, John. Appreciate you asking me back on to finish up.
Yes.
Everybody wasn't too disappointed that last weekend I wasn't able to make it, but I'm glad that you still had a fallback for the show. But I do apologize to anybody who tuned in to hear the rest of the story. And
I understand, no problem. I have to say that at this moment, on the front page of untoldmystery.com, you see a video that I uploaded to Google Video that talks about underground bases in the United Kingdom. An MI6 agent called James Gaspold. And if people go now to untoldmysteries.com or unexplained.eu, you can actually see a video Google that I uploaded, and it talks about underground bases, secret projects, mind control, and there are similarities with what he described and what you described. So maybe if you have time in the future, you can actually listen to that video that I uploaded.
Yeah, I'd planned on it when you called me and told me about it. I was really interested.
Yes, I just gave this tip for the viewers. For all people who do not know you, can you gave a very brief, short briefing for the people that realize what you have experienced in the past. I know it's difficult to make a summary of something that is complex, but, try anyway.
Okay, I was inducted into the U.S. Navy in 1988, of June 6th, served 4 years to 1992, was in the Persian Gulf War. In boot camp, everybody was taken into a room for some controlled mind altering sessions. Several of us out of our company was actually taken back in for an extra week, and some more than others. I served my 4 years aboard the USS Ranger CV-61 as a firefighter damage controlman. Certain times I would be pulled off to go do certain things at other bases for a small amount of time. The biggest amount of time that I was TAD was during the Persian Gulf War when I worked for the UN as an advisor and was sent to ground forces to advise what the UN wanted the ground forces to do. In 1992, I got out of the military and was told that I had a post at Washington to head up the committee on shipboard living and living conditions. I refused that post, and because they required me to stay in the military, I was then assured that I would never again have any duty station aboard a ship, as long as I wanted it that way, that my duty stations would only incur being in Washington and doing things for people in Washington.
I also heard that you described that you have a certain kind of authority because of you have a mandate from the United Nations, and you can actually tell generals what to do because you have this from higher up of the United Nations.
Under the UN directive, which is what I ended up being when I went to AD, I was an assessment advisor for the UN. And yeah, under the UN's direction, generals were taking orders from the UN, but they were taking them from me. And if they had gone against those orders, they would be going against the UN, which, when they signed the treaty several years before, stated that America would fall in line with what the UN wanted, and they couldn't even go to war without the UN's okay.
And it's also because you are connected to the special program that you've been part of a kind of a mind control project, I would say, like a very strange way of how they trained you.
Well, yeah, during our boot camp, of course, it started with the whole company, and the room was a little bit smaller than regular classrooms, so it started with the whole company, but soon they weeded out a certain amount of individuals, and then there was just enough individuals in the room to sit in the seats, and from that they started on different types of mind control. That
you also were in a kind of a simulation that you have to take over a Navy vessel.
Well, it was actually a mock-up Navy vessel. Anybody that's been to the boot camp in San Diego will know that they've got a mock-up battleship sitting there. It's a building, but it looks just like a battleship. And after going into the room, one of my objectives was I was a saboteur, and I, by any means necessary, I was supposed to get aboard that ship and get the key codes from the captain, and later found out that it was to sink the ship. I didn't know it until I hooked up into the Navy comm, and a Navy SEAL comm, and entered the codes, and then it said that there was a 2-minute countdown, 2-minute and 30-second countdown. It was flooding the whole ship.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't know it, but and I didn't know it until that time. But all ships in the Navy have that that countermeasure that if they're ever seized, that they could actually flood the ship so quickly that it would just sink, in order to not allow anything to get into the enemy's hands.
Now, you have been in an underground base in Denver Airport.
Yes, I was. Go ahead.
For a lot of people, when they hear Denver Airport, they think about Freemason symbols in the world of secret societies and conspiracies.
There's quite a bit of in the artwork and in the statues. I've seen it firsthand, a little bit of it. I've seen more with people that took pictures, and most of them were questioned about, were you allowed to, did you have to sneak around taking these pictures? And they said no. In fact, the security was quite happy to show us around and say, you might want a picture of this and you might want a picture of that. And it seemed like a lot of people that took pictures said it seemed almost like the security was boasting, look at this painting. And there's quite a lot of paintings, and I understand most of those paintings were done by a Native American artist, and he painted a lot of Nazi symbolism and Freemasonry symbolism.
And he was ordered to do so. It's some kind of a
I don't know if he was ordered to do so, or if they just because he's Native American doesn't mean he can't be part of that genre, he was probably somebody that they trusted pretty well in order to, paint those murals.
Now, what I learned from James Casbell, that I interviewed for 4 hours, by the way, it was meant for 3 hours, but it turned out for 4 hours. The first part already is online on Video Google. I just uploaded it. What he told me is that part of the mind control is also using Masonic symbols. Did you know that?
I'd heard, and somebody... there's a guy that I was listening to that was talking about, and I did not know this until he stated it, and I don't know how much validity it has, but he was talking about them doing the where you have a worker and he takes you, and what you do that thing in your mind where you go into the past or the future. You know what I'm talking about? You know what that's called?
No problem.
And he said that they flash up on there, on the screens, when they're doing that, a lot of Jewish symbolism from Judaism. And
especially when you talk about Kabbalah symbols.
Exactly, the Kabbalah symbols, you know, and I found that pretty intriguing, and I thought, I'm going to have to put that back to research that, because I had not heard about that before, but it would make a lot of sense, because if you think about it, and this is kind of off the subject, but if you think about it, man started out in the earliest days, we really didn't have writing. It's outside of our realm to really understand the writing we have today. We were all pictures and symbols, and that's mm-hmm. how our mind thought, and that's how they've been able to dumb us down. I read a report on it, the guy talking, you know, once they took our symbolism away, they were able to dumb us down because they got us to think inside the box instead of outside, when we used to think in symbols. We thought.
And I also know that the alphabet of the Hebrew is a shadow of a 3D object. So actually, when you're watching it, it's actually a kind of symbolism that comes from a 3D object.
Oh, really?
Yes. So people really don't realize, if you have a ram's horn and you have this spiral movement, it's also the torus, when you have this special donut shape, and in it you can actually have the spiral motion, and this is the symbol of infinity. And when you throw a shadow, or you make a shadow over the ram's horn, you actually see the whole alphabet if you turn it a certain degrees all the time.
Really?
So you have to question, why do they have a language that is a representation of something that is 3D? So you can think about that. Why they do that?
Exactly. Have you ever, and I'm just wondering this just because it brings up a question in my mind, have you ever got any of your viewers to, you know, take like, say, 10 individuals and do a research thing where you know, they work with symbols and see if it heightened anything for them?
Yes, for me it's like I had because of my own experience, UFO encounter that I had as a security guard, I had some strange premonitions when I was young, and because of it, kind of confirmation, because I had the UFO encounter,
yeah,
came in the press, and someone gave me a videotape with some strange UFO coming out of the sea on the water with a symbol attached to it that I put down on paper when I was very young at age. I saw the vision of the future when I was 12 years old, and in this vision I was working on an underwater base, seeing a huge tunnel. And the end of the door, the tunnel was a door with a symbol on that door.
Was the symbol?
And I was 12 years old when I put it on paper. And when I was 24 years old, so 12 years later, I saw a documentary from Brett Steiger, The Truth About UFOs and ETs, and there was a symbol also on a UFO coming out of the sea, seen by the Navy. And this is so important for me. So I think there's a connection there, that I was being triggered somehow, somebody gave me the symbol in my visions, and then later it was confirmed. So I think more people are work for this to be triggered by symbols.
Excellent. Was that symbol, if I can ask, was it like an E with a slash on top and a dot at the bottom inside the last the bottom hump of the E?
Yes.
It was.
Very similar, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. Because that symbol has shown up since I was a child in my life. I was drawing it, you know, even before I could write, I was drawing it on paper, and it showed
up. I think that the symbol represents more than only a word. It is actually maybe a story in itself.
Right.
Like when you have the cross of Jesus, everybody knows it's more than only that. If you see a swastika, everybody knows it means more than what we see. And actually, it depends on who is using it, of course, because it can also symbols can also be abused, of course.
Exactly.
Well,
the guy had made reference to, you know, that there were symbols that they did not use when they did this mind walking or dedicated mind to go back to you know, grab certain things or to see about history or to mark an occasion, and he said that there were certain symbols they would not use and could not.
I also feel that certain symbols are meant for key people in the world to be activated to have access to part of their memory, because like open doors of your hidden memory, like dormant, waiting to be activated.
Right.
And that can be for the good, and it can be for the bad. So you can actually say you have mind control projects that use symbols for the bad, you know, to abuse you.
Well, I've read articles that said that they did that in Montauk.
Mm-hmm.
They were real big into that, and that was where they took a lot of the children. I think the guy that you had on a couple weeks ago, or a week ago, was it? You know, that he said that he was kind of like one of the Montauk children. I mean, were in his area, but a lot of the stuff they did at Montauk, they did on him. The guy that said that they had actually threw him in the cage with a reptilian.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that guy? Or no, a big snake. The big snake?
Yes. David?
Yes.
Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
I think the line was dead, I thought. Okay. Another question. When you were in this underground base in Denver, you talk about this strange door. And yet you it's for like an elevator. You were in a small hole, and then you have an elevator going deeper underground.
Yeah, it was an elevator, and I use that term loosely because it was a compartment that you step into. It looked like an elevator, but there was no buttons on this elevator. There was
mm-hmm.
what looked to be like a panel should be there, but there's no panel. But this elevator seemed to stop at certain times going down, and I suppose also going up. But when it got down to, I guess, at a certain level that only people are allowed to be at, everybody was off of this elevator except for me and this African-American lady. And she's like, you can't go any further. And I said, you know, I was like, well, how do you know? And she said, well, you have to pass security to go further. And this panel came out of where normally the buttons would be about that time. And I was looking at it, and I was looking at her, and she said, I've never seen this done. This will be interesting to watch. And she kind of smiled at me, and I looked at it, and it looked like, you know, a deal that you put your head into for it to scan your eyes. And so I kind of walked over to it, and I looked, and I kind of looked inside it, and I really couldn't see anything, and I placed my head where, you know, into it where I was positioned, kind of like I don't know in the UK, but I know in America, people that have gone for eye tests to get their licenses, the machine that that they look through to calculate how well they can see, and they have to read the letters. It was kind of like that, putting your head in this deal, only a little bit more comfortable. And there was a bright flash that kind of hurt my eyes, and I jumped back just a little bit, and I was holding my eyes, and then this automated voice, like a warm voice, but it was you could tell it was a computer-generated voice
mm-hmm.
said, you know, state your password. And I immediately, without even knowing it, gave a 13 or 16-digit code. And the only thing I remember is the last part of it was 0888 alpha.
Mm-hmm.
And there was numerals and letters mixed in there. All letters were stated as the alpha, omega, or whatever, alphabet for the military. Whenever
mm-hmm.
they're spelling out words, they use that alpha, omega, deca, all that kind of stuff, Oscar, you know. And so all letters were stated in that form. And it cleared me, and she smiled and kind of patted me on the shoulder and said, you're a pretty important person. And she said, I can't stay here. And she got off the elevator, and it closed, and it continued down. And it continued down for some time. It continued down long enough for me to wonder, you know, was I ever going to get off this elevator? And it finally opened up. And what I saw was just magnificent in my eyes, because although it was a room, it was something that you would expect to see. It was, if anybody'd ever asked me, what do you think the war room looks like for Washington, D.C., this would have passed it up tenfold.
I'm thinking Denver Airport, is that not in Colorado, where also Tesla did this experiments?
Yes. Yes.
So maybe there's a connection there, that part of the Navy actually have access to a Tesla technology that is very close, and that they use that technology a part of the building this base in the first place, that there's a connection with Tesla maybe.
Well, you know, most people don't realize it, and not to get off the subject, but I will let you know, and most people don't realize it, but if you think about it, at the start of this nation of America, we did not have an army or an air force. We had a militia. And the only actual military force that we had was a Navy force, a military force, and it was Navy.
Some call that they are pirates, the Skull and Bones.
Right. But it was 1784, when the French were the first to recognize the American Navy as being an actual military force to be reckoned with, by lowering their flag when they passed one of our ships. And people, a lot of times they say, you know, I don't get it, because the Air Force is better or the Army is better, and this seems like this would be part of the Army and this would be part of the Navy. And William Cooper said it best when he told people, and it's the truth, the Navy has been around so long, longer almost to the beginning of us being a nation, that
yes,
that they're the only instilled military force we really have. The Army and the Air Force are newer than the Navy. And so when going to do secret stuff or having a military force that's trustworthy for them to do secret top controlled things, you know, they're going to go with the Navy because they've been instilled the longest, you see.
And also, you have to take in consideration that the Vatican were financing and helping, strangely enough, there's a connection with the Vatican and the Columbus. So when you know that there are secret societies funding and knowing that the Earth was not flat, because they have ancient knowledge, you know, they have ancient maps, and they know that there was a civilization before this civilization, so they knew the Earth was round, but they would not tell it to the people.
Exactly.
So because they had the secret, they could go, go out there and find America.
Exactly. And it's a big farce. They still tell kids today in school that Columbus discovered America. And it's been proven time and time again, but they don't really talk about it that I know of. They still claim that Columbus discovered America, but it's been proven time and time again that there were people here way before Columbus ever came.
What I meant to say is that there may be a connection with the Vatican having worldwide their arms like an octopus, wanting to know everything what is happening in the world, having their informants, you would say. I think the Vatican is the biggest intelligence network you can imagine.
Well, of course they are.
Worldwide. And using, and now it comes, and using the Navy at that time as a tool. Like, it's like a financing it and knowing that that's a powerful tool.
Of course they are. It's a fact that that they've, you know, that they've actually had documentation that shows that there were priests that were on the CIA payroll.
And I also can imagine that if you are on a ship and you're going to conquer new countries or discover new countries, that if you have the blessing of God and you have this story about we need to spread the gospel and the truth of the message of God. Therefore, we are allowed to do what we do because we have the God behind us. You see, this is, makes it more like a spiritual quest. We have to tell the world how it is.
You know, you being an owner of a country or you being the ruler of a country may not have allowed government people to come in and try to help you better your country or give you advice, but you'd be more prone to allow a missionary who wants to help feed your people, help clothe your people and teach your people, and meantime, they have their orders and what they need to do in order to, you know, facilitate them being there. But you're 100% correct. Priests and the Vatican can get into places where normal, everyday military could not, or government officials could not.
And that's why they are the biggest intelligence gathering service on the planet.
Well, I mean, it's been proven. I mean, if during the Reich in Germany, the priests were allowed to roam freely during that time. And
now, when you do a confession, there's even a website. A colleague and friend of mine, Ruud MK12 is his nickname on Pal Talk. He gave me a link where you can do confessions. But the trick is that people think that if I confess, then my soul is rescued because I confess to the church. But actually, that is the excellent way to control the masses and to have private information that can be used against you.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, it's real easy for somebody in a high position, a bishop, to tell a priest, hey, this person in your flock, what kind of confessions has he had? And by obligation, he has to tell the bishop, you know, what was spoken of. And if the bishop said, okay, next time he comes in, I want it tape recorded, he can't question that. He has to do it. That's the way it's set up, you know.
Yes. So it can be used to help souls.
And if anybody was to actually research, the Catholic religion and the Pope and the Vatican, they would actually find out that he's a king.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how many people might know that, but it's true. He is a king. He is considered a king. He owns Vatican City, but before it was just Vatican City, they owned most of the world. Everything and more that Rome owned, they ended up owning. They just couldn't keep it. And the French took back their occupied territory, and had it been, if the French hadn't made two decisions that were wrong decisions, there would not be a Catholic religion. And there would not be a pope to this day, but they.
I think the Roman Empire with Caesar and so forth has changed his tactics. They knew that the way to win the war is that you state that you're in contact with the divine and that you are a spiritual quest. And they knew that they had to use the symbol of the cross of Jesus as a way to allow themselves to go to war to other nations and get support from people.
And how effective? I mean, that is so effective. Look at the war that Britain waged against Jerusalem for so many years, and it was all about freeing Jerusalem from the Moors and winning back the promised land for Christians, and they even created. That's where the Knights of Templar came from.
Yes,
the Knights of Templars were the guardians of the Christians that were coming there to see the Jerusalem.
And, but if people realize that actually the Christianity is hijacked by Roman Empire, that just if you look at these systems, it's all about power and all about control, and all in the name of Jesus. What's not correct, because it's not in the name of Jesus, it's in the name of power.
That's it.
So, and people look at it as like, yeah, maybe it's necessary to fight evil, but when you become evil to fight evil, that's not what Jesus talked about.
It's like the lesser of two evils, and we become a society that ponders the deal, well, there's no more right or wrong, there's just the lesser of two evils, and I'll take the lesser of two evils, and I'll give you an example. Many people say, well, 9/11 wasn't an inside job because, you know, or 9/11 wasn't a terrorist act because terrorists would have waited until the whole building was filled, before exploding it. And then the other people say, you know, well, 9/11 was an inside job, and they couldn't get away with killing thousands and thousands of people. So they waited until the building was, you know, minimal amount. And that's what I'm talking about when I say the lesser of two evils. And I've seen that time and time again, just with with America, where they choose the lesser of two evils. Now, if 9/11 was an inside job, then that was the lesser of two evils. We can either collapse these buildings when they're filled with people, or we can collapse them at a time when there's minimal people there, and that is the lesser of two evils.
By the way, I'm going to say, Dave, I listened to that. I totally agree with you. David, I'm going to say you something very strange now. Let's say that the secret government, the shadow government, have access to technology that this Project Looking Glass, that they can actually see into the future and know, because of this knowledge, they play different ball games. So they, because they knew, for if we don't do this, if we don't sacrifice this, we will at the end lose. So we have to do something, and they can actually justify what they do because they have access to, what I said, secret technologies that can see the future. Now, I'm not saying it's true, but let's say, for the sake of it, that they can actually say, yeah, we have to sacrifice our own people, but it is for the greater good at the end. It justifies the means. That is the way, you know, what William Cooper is always saying, that this is the mentality of the secret government.
Right. Oh, I agree 100%. The problem that I see, and of course I'm not into quantum physics and all that, and you have to really know your stuff to kind of understand it. But the only problem that I see in that is that if you and I had a machine that could see into the future, and we knew what was going to happen, and we had to choose the lesser of two evils to either stop it or to make it less than what it was, the problem is that we would cause a ripple effect. We would change natural history.
Yeah, that's called creating an alternative timeline.
Exactly.
And maybe they say, yes, maybe you're angry at us, but at the end we have to do this because we knew the outcome if we don't do it. You see what I mean?
But see, in my view of that, it can only... Now, I'm not saying that they're not doing it or that they don't have that kind of technology, because I believe that anything that the mind can conceive can be created. You understand? So I fully believe that if the mind can conceive it, that it's possible that it can be created. So if they are doing it, all they're doing is putting us on a spiral downward path, because no matter how much they try to fix, they're going to keep screwing it up worse and worse and worse and worse.
Okay, I'm not agreeing with this mentality. I don't say this is wonderful. I only say that maybe that's the reason that they have no remorse.
Well, I think that they have no remorse because they're so far removed. And
yeah.
When I say that, I say they don't know the common person's plight. And you're not a common person when you're... if you're a senator working in Congress, you're not a common person. And if you were a common person and you were able to make that, and get that position, you were just a common person for a small amount of time, and you become one of their puppets, or you know, they're your puppet master because you're going to do what they want you to do. But even those people that came from humble beginnings will surely forget their humble beginnings after being there for a good 4, 5, 6 years. And they forget about the common person and the plight that they're in and what it takes to survive because they're so far removed. I can't blame, I can hold accountable now. Don't misunderstand me, and nobody listening, please misunderstand me. I can hold accountable anybody who hurts another person by their actions, deeds, or warrants, okay? But I cannot blame, and I'll take, for example, let's say David Rothschild. He was so far removed from knowing what a normal life was because he grew up with nothing but money. Mm-hmm. And so for him, flying off to wherever and doing whatever was normal. That was normal to him.
So and I wonder, what does it with your behavior? If everything you want, it will be given to you, it's for you for the taking.
Well, exactly. I think
your soul will be spoiled.
Well, and you and I are actually kind of lucky that we were born where we were, because it could happen to any of us, John. And that's my full belief. I believe if I took you and put you in a position of power and threw a bunch of money at you, that in, say, 5 years, you would be so far removed from the John that we know. That's why I can't blame you. I can hold you accountable for your actions and your deeds, but I can't blame you. Most people have to understand, from day one of somebody stepping into Congress, I don't care what Congress you're talking about, whether it's in the UK, Britain, America, China, or wherever, you learn how to play ball. And you sign the bills that they want you to sign because you don't get the kickbacks if you don't. You don't get the payoff if you don't. Mm-hmm. And you definitely won't have your job very long if you don't. And they learn that very quick.
Do you also agree with me, if you snap in your fingers and it will be done for you, that you're actually not exercising your true potential? You actually are a slave to the money because of it.
Of course. They already know they can't survive without us. I mean, you understand that? It's just about numbers. They want the numbers to be down so good that they can control the populace. I mean, it was a very interesting movie. I don't know if you ever saw it or... I'm actually surprised that they were able to release it here in America. But did you ever see Fight Club, John?
Yes, I did.
You did? Did you find that very interesting, how the whole message of that show, outside of, you know, they blew up buildings, the little people have control. We cook your food. We serve you. We park your cars. We clean your houses. The little people, I mean, they were actually stating it in that movie, trying to tell people how much power you really have, because we're not dependent on them. They're dependent on us. Now,
yes.
They may have got us dependent on...
You know the story about David and Goliath?
David and what?
Goliath, we call it in Dutch, the giant.
Oh, David and Goliath.
Goliath, sorry, that's Dutch. I spoke Dutch, so
right.
Goliath, yeah,
from the Bible, yes.
But I think is that you know, there's only one person that can actually put something into your food, and you are defenseless, and you're not aware of it, and you eat something that's been poisoned. So you have to be aware that if you abuse power in whatever form or fashion, you can be poisoned, or you can be tricked. So if you trick others, you know, you'll be mirrored back in your behavior. So that's the reason they get so paranoid. That's the reason they need to have Big Brother, I think, because they're completely paranoid.
Well, you know, and the fact that, what is that old saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And, and the only thing that that you want when you have absolute power is to keep it, and to keep it is the hardest thing to do. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's a pitfall.
It is also designed to collapse in itself, because there will always be people from the inside that are fed up with being used.
That's exactly why it does not. The future doesn't frighten me like I hear it frightens a lot of people, because to me it seems to me like they're grasping at straws. and they're doing everything in their power to try to keep control and try to make their regime or their plans to come about. But it's just grasping at straws because there's no way that it cannot collapse at some point in time. There's just no way.
I just want to talk to you about this underground base that is like a NASA headquarters or NASA overview of having certain control over the strategic control over the world, maybe. And my question is, what type of person you can find there? Is it only Americans? Do you think it's international? Do you think it's maybe with aliens? What is your estimate on this, what you saw in the Denver airport underground base?
Well, the only people that I saw were, of course, technicians that were manning the consoles. I didn't speak to any of them other than them giving status reports. The man that was running the floor was an American. If he was a European, he certainly didn't have an accent that could give it away.
Do you think it's international, or do you think it's only United States controlled? That's it.
I think it's only American controlled at this point.
Okay.
I believe that. It's not a belief. It's a fact, and they proved it. Every nation has several underground cities, not just America, but Russia has, 16 of them, I think, at the last count. I'm sure in Europe they're spread out all over the place.
Have you heard about the new discovery of RAND documents? You know what RAND is, RAND Corporation?
I'm not familiar with the RAND Corporation.
Oh, the RAND Corporation is like a think tank that advised the government, especially on defense matters. They also have a RAND documents on UFOs as well, by the way. I think in 1968 that was. It was an internal document that has been not officially formed the staff, but there were some members of the RAND Corporation doing investigation of the estimate of the threat of UFOs. And they internally admit that this is something serious to be taken seriously. But that's not what I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about new releases of information concerning huge tunneling systems where there is a tube that goes approximately 10,000 miles an hour or even 14,000 miles an hour. These are special tubes connecting all the secret bases with each other. Have you heard about that?
Have I heard about it?
Yes,
from the
story.
I didn't know that it was released. Who released it? The RAND Corporation did?
I will say it. A secret underground very high-speed transit tube shuttles network going to 10,000 miles per hour, stating the RAND documents. Now, the RAND documents is officially government think tank that advises the military, and they have a vast network
that actually released that. I don't know about 10,000 miles an hour. That's,
yes, they call it very high speed transit, VHST. That's what they call it.
I just kind of wonder if somebody didn't fudge the deal on that. I was aware of tunnels that were bigger than the gas lines, and the gas lines you can actually walk through with several people side by side with no problem. And they had special one-person vehicles that you would get in, and you had no control over it. It was all it was all monitored by people, but it was on a computer system, and it would shut down every so often to allow interconnecting tunnels to move other vehicles through, and then you would start up. But the fastest I was aware that I had heard those vehicles go was somewhere around 600 miles an hour.
Now listen to this. This is the guy from RAND Corporation. According to R.M. Salter, Jr., head of physical sciences department at RAND, the idea of high-speed train travel using electromagnetic suspension was first put forward in 1905 and actually patented in 1912. The train suggested now will be single cars rather than actual trains. and would be big enough to carry both passengers and freight, including large containers and automobiles. Mm-hmm. They talk about a vast network, and they call it VHST. So it's you know, you just go to untoldmystery.com and click on it, and you see the official WAN document talking about it.
Cool. Well, there's no doubt in my mind, because whether people know it or not, you can go back to 1940s and 30s and type in, you know, tunnel digging machines, and you can see pictures of these huge, vast digging machines that could dig a tunnel at 5 feet a day, I believe, or 15 feet a day. They were bigger than 45 feet in diameter, a circle, and it could dig like 5 to 15 feet a day, depending on where, how rocky or how hard the surface was. But that was back in the 1930s. And most people don't know that that existed. And if you search long enough, you will actually find, I don't know, I think the picture's been circulated pretty good, so I think most people would know what I'm talking about, but you can actually find the Air Force has their own digging machines with their...
Indeed.
With the emblem on them, with the Air Force emblem on them and everything. And that picture was back in the 1970s.
And by the way, it's L.A. Times, June 11, 1972, and the story in the L.A. Times confirms the WAN documents, and the story is like this. L.A. to New York in a half hour, 10,000 miles an hour, a tunnel train plan developed. And now we talk about 1972 article in the L.A. Times.
Right.
So you can dig it up. You just Google L.A. Times, and then June 11, 1972, they talk about it, that they officially were working on this vast network of tubes.
That is very interesting that they would allow that information out.
Yes, I think it's important people realize that... if there's anything going to happen on the surface, the elite, they go underground, I think. They're going to say, bye-bye, we know where to go.
Of course.
and guess what? We paid for them that they can be rescued with our money.
Well, and it's quite deep, too, because I can tell you, you know, when I was on the elevator, you know how when you go up in a plane and you're changing altitudes, how your ears, they kind of hurt or they have to pop, you have to chew some gum to get the pressure off your eardrums.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly what happened going down in the elevator. it seemed like the pressure changed, and of course I don't know if that's because we were going down really deep or because to get oxygen pumped down there it took quite a bit of pressure to get it all the way down there. But you know, as I was going down in the elevator, sure enough, you know, I had to yawn to relieve the pressure off my eardrums.
Indeed. So, by the way, for the people who want to know more about underground bases, also a good one is Phil Schneider. He's, of course, telling it from a Christian point of view, but nevertheless, he's worthwhile to listen to. Just Google video Phil Schneider. He has been killed, and he had also a fight with aliens, and people would say he's crazy, but if you listen to his story, I think he's very convincing.
Right.
What do you think about Phil Schneider?
This is the first time I've actually heard about him.
Well, Phil Schneider is an expert on how to blow up. He's an explosive expert.
Right.
And and geophysicist, and he knows how to create underground bases. He's the one who has to investigate if location is able to be used as an underground base in the first place. So they ask him, and his father was a German scientist that was imported through Project Paperclip, and he's not happy about that. He feels himself more like an American than from Germany, but his father was one of the scientists that came to the United States through this Project Paperclip.
Very interesting.
So type in Phil Schneider. And you will find out his story. You know, it is amazing, the evidence that he shows, because he's not only talking, he shows stuff. He really shows his credentials. And if anyone never heard about him, you know, he's really amazing, talking about underground bases and tunneling and encounters with ETs as well.
Right. Very interesting.
I wish to thank you so much, David, for being a part of this radio show, Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine. And... you did a good job, and in the future I definitely want to know more about you. And this broadcast will be soon online as well. I will put it online for you so that you can download your that you can listen to your how this interview went. And is there something that you wish to share with the world that you think is important for people to know about?
I just think that you know, this is the time of awakening, and please do not hinder yourself in any way, shape, or form by when I say awakening. I mean, if something inside of you, if something in your mind says, I need to research something, or I need to go somewhere, or I need to, you know, learn more about this, the goings on over here, then it's for a reason. You're being directed, you know, to learn something, to a value that's going to help you later on, you know. And so don't to heed that calling to the awakening.
Indeed. Thank you so much, David. David Goff. He's on Pal Talk. His name on Pal Talk is Caesar Effect. And you also had another nickname, the old nickname. Can you tell me the old nickname of Pal Talk? I lost it. Can you give me that name too? Say again?
Captain Fantastic.
Yes, Captain Fantastic. Wonderful, wonderful name. But I always love to have you in my Pal Talk room. And for people who don't know how you can find Pal Talk, it's very simple. You can just download the messenger, paltalk.com, and join in Social Issues Other, subcategory Other, and there you can find, also in the 911 room, was an inside job, you can find Caesar Effect.
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much for being a part of the show, and I make some closing statements on other topics, and I say goodbye for you, and see you in the future.
All right, thank you very much, John. It was good talking to you, sir.
Okay, all the best. Bye-bye.
All right.
Okay, dear people, listeners, if you go to alternativemedia.eu or forbiddennews.eu, and EU stands for Europe, so alternativemedia.eu or forbiddennews.eu, you will see that I uploaded new information concerning fluoride deception. In Australia, people were fighting, talking about the fluoridation of water, that the more and more evidence is there that there is a giant effect on fluoridization of water. So in Australia, there's a struggle. It's on the mainstream. Over 200,000 Australians may suffer illnesses result of fluoride. And there's a fight, a battle going on, because, of course, there is a cover-up going on. But I also put on that same page the fluoride deception documentary made in 2003 in BBC Quality. And the other postings that I put on video is on this alternativemedia.eu or forbiddennews.eu. You can see some postings talking about the end game from Alex Jones. There's also information concerning abuse of power by police, that you see more and more police brutality. And the question is, why is it so important that we talk about that? Why is it important that people think about police brutality? The reason for it is that they have to uphold and enforce the law that is illegal in the first place. So they become an extension of corporate abuse. So corporations, lobbyists are pushing for certain laws, and then you have the police, they have to enforce it. So when you want to fight that, you're actually going to, protest against abuse of power, and before you know it, you see more and more police brutality. They use tasers, they use pepper spray. It's all, the same tactics that they did in the past when the Nazis came to power. So what you see is that more and more people will be confronted in the open, that they, if you don't obey, you will be punished at the spot. You have to have, that there are certain rights that you have, but they abuse the rights that you have. So you have to study how the development of the police is and how they behave to, are they servants? Are they helping us? Are they to serve and to protect? Or are they to be the puppets for their masters, for the New World Order masters? So if you go to that website, Forbidden News and Alternative Media, you will see more abuse of power by the police, also in England, by the way, and also in other countries. There are police officers dressing as protesters to create a reason that they can use more force. Did you know that? Also, that you can call it a little false flag operation from the police insiders. They've done it in Germany. They've done it in Italy. They've done it in Canada. So there are more and more evidence that you can see that the police dressed like protesters, and more and more people are waking up. Why is this happening? They just want to have an excuse that they can actually use more force. And the moment that they use more force, this will be, of course, filmed by the mainstream media and showed how bad the protesters are. Meanwhile, they can show how much force they can use, like pepper spray, tasers, and other, non-lethal weapons. If you're going to Google non-lethal weapons and what the government is talking about it, they're also going to use extreme low frequency waves and microbeam technologies. Now, when that is happening, then you have to question from why is it that first they deny it, we don't use that, and then slowly they actually do it. They just use ELS or special equipment that the police have, and they call it so-called non-lethal weapons. I think it's a part of the tyranny to scare the people to speak out, to come up for your rights. There's even a woman arrested, or a couple of women were arrested, for reading the Constitution. How ridiculous is that, So this is a world of Big Brother, and 1984 is happening, and more people are afraid to protest because of those cameras installed everywhere, intelligent cameras, by the way. And so my question is, how long does it take that we are waking up, that it is happening in your face? And what are you going to do about this? You still say that you're in denial or it's not happening? Okay, I hope you take the time to go to that website called alternativemedia.eu and forbiddennews.eu. There's much more there, by the way. Also, a video update of James Casbolt. That I just uploaded on Video Google. And hope you enjoyed this radio show, and I see you next week, every Saturday on bbsradio.com. And the radio show is called Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine. And my name is John Kulis from the Netherlands. See you next week. Bye-bye.